Now, we received a very disturbing email from a listener named Jackie last week describing what appears to have been a hack of somebody's Facebook account. It was an acquaintance of hers, and whoever got into that account posted a fake death notice for them. So friends and family all around the world were absolutely horrified when they saw a rest in peace message posted on this young man's page, followed by a plea for everyone to please celebrate his life by sharing their memories on the page. Only problem is the person whose page it was very much alive and well. He just hadn't been on Facebook for a very long time. His account was effectively dormant because he no longer used the platform. And you can imagine the panic that followed as friends reached out to family members who in turn were terrified that something had happened to him that they just hadn't heard about yet. It caused absolute chaos and a huge amount of unnecessary anxiety among friends all over the world as they scrambled to try and find out what happened. And look, we still don't know who was responsible or what possible motivation they could have had for such an absolutely reprehensible fake posting. But it does once again raise several different issues for me. There is the question of our online etiquette when it comes to sharing news of a death. There is the question of what happens to somebody's online accounts when they are not used for a long time. And thirdly, there is the question of what becomes of our social media profiles in the event that somebody does actually pass away. And to chat to us about all of those things, it's a great pleasure to welcome back to the show Emma Sadlier, South Africa's leading expert on social media law, founder of the digital law company who specialize in educating and advising everybody from corporates to schools to parents and teachers about the world of social media and its risks. Emma, it's always great to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Well, it's lovely to speak to you. Thank you for having me.
We sent you a copy of the email that Jackie sent to us describing this extraordinary, horrible, I think we must call it a hack. I can't imagine what else it could have been. But what distressed all of us besides the content was how could something like that happen? Emma, how does a random stranger get access to your social media account that you haven't used for several years?
Yeah, well, it's such a big issue at the moment, not just necessarily the hacking and posting of death notices, but the hacking generally. And we see hacking for all sorts of reasons. You know, we see people creating fake accounts, maybe pretending that you can't have access to your first account and then asking you to befriend a new account and then sending you desperate pleas for money. We see people hacking accounts and posting horrific terrorist content and then accounts being shut down. That actually happened to my sister-in-law. Wow. Lives in Cape Town, where she went to sleep one Sunday night and somebody hacked into her account. And she got an email from Facebook saying that there'd been an unusual login. Yeah. But obviously she didn't see it because she was still asleep. And then they posted this horrific sort of ISIS propaganda. Wow. And Facebook took the decision to permanently deactivate her account. No appeal mechanism. Thanks for coming. And that's it. All of your content, which you've had on Facebook for, in her case, 13 years, including pictures of her deceased father, gone. That's it. So I'm seeing more and more people finding themselves in huge amounts of distress because of hacking. Now, obviously, this email from Jackie is just awful. And I think there's a lot to be talked about with ethical considerations of posting that people have died. Sometimes people finding out that their family members have died by posts on social media. Yeah. And that's something that journalists have to deal with. But I think the first line of defense has to be to make sure that your Facebook account is not going to be the one that gets hacked.
Now, the million-dollar question is, how do we do that? Emma, is good password etiquette is one thing. Is there anything beyond having a difficult-to-crack password that is changed often? More than that, what can we do?
So a good password is a good thing, and a good password is not password, and it's not password 123, and it's not password with a capital P. You know, the clever people used to talk about how we had to have a capital letter and then a number and a symbol. Now they say take three completely random words like table, light, ceiling, mm-hmm. and put them next to each other, and that's much, much more difficult to crack. I think also very important is to remember what your passwords are. So my advice always, and it's one that I take myself, is I have a little book where I keep all my passwords and have it in a safe place in my house, because I think that's actually safer than having a password manager, which can also be hacked.
Yeah.
So the password is a good step. But better than that, Pippa, is to have in place what we call two-factor verification. Now, basically what that means is that if there's ever a new login into your account, and it's not just Facebook, you know, I've even got it on WhatsApp, it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you have in place two-factor or two-step authentication. But basically, if somebody tries to log into your account, even if they've got your username, your password, your email address, you get sent an SMS with a code. It's just like an OTP, right? Yep. When you're doing your banking. And then I've got to have my phone, and then I get this combination of numbers which I have to put in. So it's just that extra layer. And I can't recommend how important it is for everybody to use that. So it's very easy to set it up on Facebook. I've actually got a Facebook post of it from a couple of weeks ago. But basically, you go into your settings, you click security and login, and then you'll see there's a little subsection there called two-factor authentication section. Mm-hmm. And then you can choose which way you want to get your two-factor authentication. So I use a text message. It actually happened to me the other day. I woke up one morning and I had a two-factor authentication request on Twitter, which means somebody had tried to hack my Twitter account. And because they didn't have that magic pin, sent to my mobile, they couldn't get in, which was great. I mean, there are difficulties with it. For example, if you don't have access to that phone number anymore, so you've got to make sure that everything's kind of up to date. But it is a very, very good step, and I highly recommend everybody puts it on.
Okay, that's fantastic advice. Thank you very much. I mean, several people go asking the same question, which we all asked ourselves here. In the case of this case that Jackie brought to us, why would somebody do that? What is going through the mind of a hacker who goes to all the effort of hacking into somebody's page to post a fake death notice? And I mean, we don't know the inside of his or her head, Emma, but broadly speaking, would that be, I mean, have you encountered cases like this before? Is it something that happens out of revenge or...
You know, I haven't encountered a case like this. What I have encountered, Pippa, is people somehow managing to hack into deceased accounts. So that's something we need to talk about. But basically, yep. When somebody dies on social media, there are three options available. The one is you do absolutely nothing and you leave the account active, right?
Yep.
I don't like that because, you know, there are control issues. And I think that it's better to do one of the other two options, which is the first option, which is to either delete the account in its entirety. So everybody has the option, and it's the other thing I highly recommend everyone listening does, is to appoint someone called a Facebook legacy contact. Now, that's somebody who you choose from your friend list, so it's got to be somebody who you really trust. But it's somebody who you choose from your friend list who, in the event of your death, gets given the keys to your account. So they can't access your private messages, but what they can do is they can access this magic button, which allows them to download a copy of all of your content on Facebook, which is great because so many of us, you know, we've gone are the days of inheriting a shoebox full of photographs and letters. Yeah. It's almost like we've got to make provision for that, for our loved ones to access our digital assets. So it's something that all of us have as an option available to us. We can all go now and download a copy of what we've shared on Facebook. But it does mean that anybody who gets given the keys to our account, because they're our Facebook legacy contact, will be able to download all of those pictures. Once that's done, they can delete the account or they can memorialize it. Now, if you memorialize an account, mm-hmm. it becomes static, which means that you don't get a notification that it's that person's birthday. You know, because I often see sort of people talking to deceased people almost like they're alive. And for me, it's really quite weird. It used to just be a completely static account. Now these memorialized accounts, they allow you to write tributes. So it's got like a special tribute section. It's almost like the modern day obituary, I think. So to go back to why people do it, so what I was going to say is that I've had people contact me to say that they have a deceased family member whose account has been memorialized, and then they've been receiving messages from that account.
Oh, no.
I know, absolutely horrific. And actually, because I was just preparing for this chat, I was just doing a bit of Googling, and Facebook pages are awash with people complaining of this kind of activity, and Facebook really doing damn all about it. You know, Facebook really holding Facebook accountable, which is something we've talked about on the show, is sometimes a thankless task. I do think people should appoint a Facebook legacy contact. And, you know, I was talking about it to my colleague before I chatted to you, and she said it could almost be a prank that somebody pulls. I mean, a very sick prank.
Yeah.
But, you know, there isn't a day that goes by after reading one of my inbox emails where I do sort of shake my head and say, whatever next. You know, it's unbelievable the kind of content we're seeing on social media.
Emma, are there any potential legal consequences if they were able to trace the person responsible for that prank? I mean, the user's not using the Facebook account and hasn't been for several years. You've just mentioned how hard it is to hold Facebook accountable. What sort of line of pursuit is there available?
So, under ECTA in South Africa, Section 86 of ECTA, an unlawful interception of data is a criminal offence.
Okay.
So if you could identify who it is, and usually that would be practical reasons, somebody knows somebody who did it, or there's an admission, or perhaps you could find somebody who's technically savvy enough to be able to trace for example, the IP address from whence it came. But it is famously difficult trying to find out who's behind particularly anonymous Facebook accounts. So there would be options. You know, there could also be, depending on what's being posted, there could be sort of damages claims for dignity infringement or defamation, depending on what's being posted. Certainly if it suddenly looked like I'd been posting horrific ISIS propaganda and live beheadings, I would really want to hold accountable whoever was responsible for that.
Yeah.
The reality is that it's almost certain you wouldn't be able to find out.
That's very distressing to say the least. Here's a voice note that has come in from one of our listeners talking about Facebook hacking. We've also had several people saying that they've got multiple accounts because of this, that they have had to start an entirely new page because somebody got access to a previous one. And the follow-up question from that is, how do you make the previous ones unusable to the person who hacked into them? Is there anything you can do sort of retrospectively? Emma, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. Sorry,
yes,
I was going to play the voice note first.
Okay, no, sorry. Question first, then the voice note. Apologies. Okay.
No problem. So you should be able to request that Facebook deactivates that account. Facebook has every single FAQ on Facebook's site at the moment starts with the caveat that they're working on real skeletal staff because of COVID and people working from home. So already it was a nightmare trying to get Facebook to respond to you. It's even harder at the moment. But yes, you should be able to request, certainly if somebody has impersonated you, somebody has accessed your account, you should be able to apply to have that account deleted. And then from your own point of view, because one of the factors here was that this person who was the victim of the hacking had a kind of a dormant account.
Yeah.
I would say if you're not using your Facebook account, it's much more sensible to deactivate it. There are two ways to sort of delete your Facebook account. The one is to deactivate it, which means you just kind of keep all the content, but if you're not actively using it, you just kind of go into hiding. The other is to permanently delete it. You have 30 days to change your mind. And really, it's very easy to do. And it's just something you should Google. How do I delete my Facebook account if you want to permanently delete it forever and ever? And how do I deactivate my Facebook account if you just want to go into social media hiding, which you could reignite the account down the line?
So if you're taking a 3-month detox from social media, that's the one you want. Okay. Let's take a listen to that voice note now.
We must also be careful when using Facebook, because you get a lot of these games, so to speak, where they ask what's your favorite color, who was your first teacher, what's your maiden surname, to reveal X or Y about you. But in the meantime, it's people that's fishing for information to hack your account.
It's such an important point. Emma, I cringe when I see those. What's your stripper name? Combine the name of your first pet and your mother's maiden name kind of thing. It's a very real risk that the person's just mentioned.
Well, it is because, you know, a lot of accounts that you have, maybe not necessarily your Facebook account, but a lot of accounts that you have what we call recovery questions.
Yeah.
So if you need to access your account, you will get something asked like the name of the street in which you were born, or your mother's maiden name is a very, very common recovery question. And so often these sort of quizzes and games that people play are really just people trying to find out what the answers to those recovery questions would be. The other big issue that we've got is a sort of a data protection issue. When you start playing a game which is linked to Facebook, you have to give that third party access to basically all of your Facebook information, including all of your Facebook contacts and everything you own. So really be very, very careful before starting any of these, take this quiz for what personality type I am, or start playing this game with my Facebook friends.
And gosh, some of us have done a lot of it under lockdown, so be warned and be wary. Okay, we're almost out of time, but Emma, very quickly, we touched on this earlier, the issue of the etiquette around when there genuinely has been a death of somebody you know. What's your advice on when it's okay to post about it on social media?
Yeah, I think that you know, there's this sense often that it's the most important to be first. And I think that really has got to be at the back of your mind when it comes to death. Obviously, we've got to deal with the sensitivities around the death and particularly to make sure that immediate family know and are not going to find out on social media. You know, I'm thinking of this friend of mine who died on Table Mountain just after lockdown ended. And I found out about that on Facebook. And I had heard actually that he had died and the body had been recovered. But I was kind of monitoring before I posted kind of my tribute. I wanted to make sure that the authorities had released the information themselves and that the family knew about it, because God forbid a family member found out from my Facebook status. So I think, you know, err on the side of caution, and where you're unsure, certainly keep your pen dry and don't post.
Those are wise words in so many spheres of life. Emma Sadlier, always great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
It's an absolute pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. Keep well. Emma, of course, the founder of the digital law company, the leading expert on social media law in this country.